Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Callum Borchers. For decades, education experts and advocates have tried to close the nationwide achievement gap between low and high-income students. Yet, a new study finds the gap is still as wide as it was half a century ago. The study appears today in Education Next, an academic journal published by Harvard's John F. Kennedy School of Government. Professor Paul E. Peterson is senior editor of Education Next and a co-author of the study. He's also the Henry Lee Shattuck Professor of Government and Director of the Program on Education Policy and Governance at Harvard's Kennedy School. And he joins us now on the line. Hello.
Well, Callum, thank you for asking me to join your show.
Well, we're glad that you're here, Professor Peterson, and I'm wondering if you can begin by just telling us what led you to this study. Were you just sort of investigating a hunch or something else?
Well, there had been some previous work in this area that had shown that the achievement gap between the very highest income group and the very lowest income group had widened dramatically over the last 50 to 75 years. And I thought the data was rather limited. There was only 12 studies that it was based on. So since I knew we had this information for a much larger number of data points, actually 98, we said, well, let's find out whether or not that finding is correct, and I thought we would find a closing of the achievement gap, but no, we found that it just stayed the same. It hasn't changed over the 50-year period.
I see. And as you know, some of the academics who have previously found a widening achievement back have criticized your work, but either way, the results aren't all that encouraging, whether the gap is as wide as it has been or getting worse. And I just wonder if you have a theory, if you were able to figure out in your work what the cause is. I mean, why isn't the gap getting closer?
Well, it's we feel more confident about actually documenting exactly how wide the gap is. It's about 3 to 4 years worth of learning when you reach the age of 15. That's a pretty large gap between the top 10% and the bottom 10%. And if you just look at the top 25%, the bottom 25%, it's still about 2.5 to 3 years wide. So it's a very wide gap that doesn't close at all. And why it doesn't close, that is, you know, you might say, well, nothing has changed over that time period. But we think things have changed. I mean, there's been a tremendous effort to close the gap by the school system, and the federal government has sponsored compensatory education programs and Head Start programs, and there's been a lot of state laws that have tried to redistribute resources more effectively to low-income school districts. But this may all be offset by the fact that there's been a change in the structure of the teaching force, that talented women are finding other professions that they're going into, and it's harder and harder to attract a talented teaching force.
Well, so talk to me a little bit more about the theory about the degradation, perhaps, of the quality of teaching, because that's one of the factors you highlighted in your study, but I'm not sure how you would solve that problem, right? Because if you have women with more career opportunities now who previously were confined to teaching, that's not something we want to go back to, right? So how else could we address the lack of an ability to close this gap?
Well, other countries do have much more talented teachers than we have. I mean, we rank very low as compared to other major countries in the level of talent among teachers. So, and how do they do it? Well, first of all, they make sure that they identify talented women and then attract them into schools of education. Whereas we have 1,500 schools of education in the country, and the elite institutions of our society don't provide training for teachers, and the very least selective higher education institutions rely on their teacher education program as a way of surviving. So we've got a sort of a completely wrong-headed way of recruiting people into education. So that's one thing that we really need to change. And the second thing is we should be paying teachers in the same way that women are being paid in other major professions. They're paid according to their merit. Whereas in education, you slowly get a little bit more money each year that you teach, but the meritorious teacher doesn't get any special rewards. So it's really not much of an incentive to go into teaching if you're a talented person.
And I know that aside from the quality of instruction, you also looked at resources that are available to someone in the home. You examined things like whether a child has his or her own bedroom, for example, or whether there's a TV or a computer in the home. And remember, this goes back decades. So there was a time when those were sort of novelties. So were you using that strictly as sort of proxies to determine the family's wealth, or were there specific factors that weighed on the student's academic performance?
Well, we actually say that we are comparing the haves to the have-nots.
Mm-hmm.
And the haves are haves because their parents have more education. They have a college degree. They have advanced education, perhaps. And also they have more material possessions in the home available to the student. That's what the student tells the interviewer when they take the test. So, yes, that's how we document that there is this wide gap. And now, are there changes in society that may have contributed to the perpetuation of this gap? Well, they tend to go in two different directions. On the one hand, people are staying in school a lot longer, and so we've actually closed the educational attainment gap. So we have many more people with high school diplomas now than we ever had 50 years ago. And we also have a widening income gap. So income is moving in one direction and education is moving in another. And from my point of view, the trends out there in society are pretty much a wash. There isn't a lot of clear indication of things moving in one direction or another. For example, we have much better nutrition today than we had many years ago. We have much better medical services today. They're much more egalitarian today than they once were. So there's a lot of positive things that have happened in society that should have helped to close the gap. There are some negative things in society that might have opened the gap, and the big negative would be the widening of the income gap.
Professor Paul E. Peterson's research appears today in Education Next. He's a co-author of the study and also the senior editor there, and he's the director of the Program on Education Policy and Governance at Harvard's Kennedy School. Professor Peterson, thanks for your time today.
Thank you for asking me to join you, Callum.
All right, let's bring in someone who has been studying educational disparities in Greater Boston and how to alleviate them for a long time. Barbara Field is a member of the Black Educators Alliance of Massachusetts and the former head of the Office of Equity in the Boston Public School System, and she joins us now on the line. Hello there, Barbara.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well. So we were just speaking with Professor Peterson about his study that was published today, and he talked about some of the factors that he thinks may be contributing to the persistent gap between low and high income students. What's your theory about why that gap persists today?
I believe the gap persists around one key factor, and that is the access to opportunity. When we talk about the achievement gap, we really are talking about an opportunity gap, and that opportunity is often measured by whether you have wealth or poverty. Those who have wealth are able to provide all of the resources that their family, their children, students need, whereas those who do not have that wealth do not have access. And that means because our schools are under-resourced, which is a mechanism by which we say that we will level the playing field. But that is not happening. We have seen our school budgets be slashed. We have seen our schools closed so that there is not the continuity around students having access to quality teachers, to a rigorous curriculum, to the arts, to all of the things that students need to progress. You cannot close schools because you say a school is underperforming when it is under-resourced and then move students about two and three times before they even reach high school and think that they are going to excel in the same way that students who have all those resources, they have science labs, they have language labs. They have access to all kinds of programs, STEM programs, and then you're going to try to measure that through a test, which is not the real measurement for student performance, nor for school performance. And I think the reforms, the educational reforms that have been put forth are dealing with everything except what the real issue is. And what it is dealing with is the correlation between wealth, poverty, and how our students are faring on these tests. And that then pushes our schools to do test prep instead of educating our students in the way they should be educated, with schools that have the resources and the mechanisms and teachers with the support that they need to make that happen.
You know, you mentioned the quality of teaching. We were talking about that with Professor Peterson as well. You know, his study suggested that part of the decline in the quality of teaching, assuming that it exists, it could partly because of opportunities available to women, women previously who would not have had professional opportunities, who went into teachers. And there are those who say the evidence for this theory is kind of thin. So I'm curious what you see in this space.
Well, in this space, I see that, number one, we need to stop teacher bashing and putting everything at the foot of teachers and not look at how the larger society is failing in putting those resources in place. I think that teachers are asking for professional development. I think teachers are not just women, even though that's the majority of teachers, it's men as well. And I really think that we are not looking at what the real issues are. And, you know, to lay it at the foot of just women shows to me a lack of understanding of who's in our schools. And also we really need to be promoting men coming into teaching, because our boys need to see men. They also need to see in those urban centers and throughout, they need to also see men and women of color teaching. So it's much more complex than, you know, just looking at women through the eyes of what he or she or whoever is doing it may think women need, but to look at what our schools and our children need.
You know, as you were talking about opportunities a moment ago, I was struck by the fact that you were talking about sort of everyday things like access to a STEM curriculum, because we were just talking about the extreme opportunity example last week with that very high-profile college admission scandal, right, where parents were paying large sums of money to get their kids admitted to elite schools. Those are probably a very, let's hope, it's a very small percentage of what's going on. But you're seeing things, I take it, even from your time on the ground in the school system, right, to much more everyday problems that rear their head.
Definitely. And I think what was exposed around the school college admission test, I think it's just the tip of the iceberg. But I think it is an example of how we talk about merit is the factor that opens the doors or should open the doors. And we have negative conversations around affirmative action, but we don't talk about the kind of affirmative action that was exposed with this admissions scheme that was going on. We don't talk about the fact that if you have money and your parents can pay for a building on a college campus, that gives you access. We don't talk about if you're parent works at a college, you then have access, and it's free access when you have money. We don't talk about those things when we talk about access. And so the old saying, the rich gets richer, the poor gets poorer, because the poor do not have access. You know, they're more going by merit in some instances than those who have money, because they can't afford to buy a good score on an exam. You know, they can't afford to buy a building, pay for a building so they can get in. They can't do that to access the elite colleges and universities, which takes us into the quality of teaching. Who is to say that those who attend elite colleges and universities are more equipped and more prepared to teach our children than those who go to some of the other colleges and universities? Because for me, the question is still there, who's getting in, how are they getting in, and how are they staying in, and how equal is that playing field?
Right. Even if you can't buy a building, maybe you can buy some test prep, and that can be a real advantage as well.
Exactly. Or you can take all of the prep that your parents, you know, can buy. You don't even have to pay for someone to give you the right score on the test, but you can take all that preparation. And in Boston, we see that happening often with our entrance to the exam schools. And so then we try to mitigate that by giving our students more prep. But then with the prep comes not having the arts, the music, theater, all of the other coursework that one needs to be a well-rounded student. So this is a complex issue, but money is definitely, and wealth is there to, you know, determine who gets what and who benefits from what. And until we address the under-resourcing of our schools, then we're not really looking at this issue through the right lens. And therefore, I think that's why we see stagnation or a little increase or a little decrease in the achievement gap, because the opportunity gap we have not addressed, and we have not yet funded our schools so that all students get the resources, and that's the course offerings. You know, that's the smaller class sizes. That's an adequate facility and not having it rain on children that those who are from wealthy families benefit and experience every day.
Barbara Fields is a member of the Black Educators Alliance of Massachusetts and the former head of the Office of Equity for Boston Public Schools. Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Callum Borchers. This is Radio Boston.
Wait, don't go yet.
Because you already know how to download a podcast.
But if you have any other tech or life question, maybe we can help you. WBUR is working on a new show, and we need your tech questions.
Or maybe your parents' questions. Just click that little phone-shaped app on your cell phone and leave a message. 617-917-4717.
Yes, we know. How quaint. A phone call. But give it a try. 617-917-4717.